got a block party. I'm your host, Mike Wall. Thanks for watching. If you're enjoying, hit that subscribe button. Like us, rate us, review us, comment on us. Our Prostitute Perform channel on YouTube. Hit me up on X, Twitter, MikeWalt68, Prostitute Perform on Instagram. Backer fans, thanks for your questions. I'll get to them here shortly. And our show is always sponsored by BetOnline. The tournament is here. BetOnline is your bracket headquarters for this season with the best bracket contests out there and odds, lines, and information on every game and every round right up to the national championship. You can access the most up-to-minute wagering information anytime for your desktop or mobile devices and then track your bracket in real time all the way through the tournament. So head to BetOnline and get in on all the action. Remember to use our promo code BELIEVE, that's BLAAV. For your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit, BetOnline, where the game starts. And we're not going to talk too much about the Packers this week. Honestly, there's not a lot going on. What did happen this week is the owners' meeting brought in some pretty interesting rules. Two in particular that are probably worth at least talking about, and then we'll hit some listener questions. I think the first one, it maybe just pertains to the Green Bay Packers more than anything else, because we have, you know, the best return guy in the league right now, Keyshawn Nixon. So the kickoff is for all of the posturing that every, you know, that the NFL's done and whatnot. The kickoff is the XFL kickoff. They've made two huge changes. And listen, the impetus, the whole story behind a lot of this stuff is more interesting than the actual results. So what they found out, there's over 1,000 plays a season where it's just there's this touchback and it's kind of a dead play in the NFL. But that's not why. And so that's been used to kind of push this through. But that's not really why they started it in the first place. The reason they started the whole scenario in the first place, let's see if I can fix this camera again. Or the reason they started looking into this was because the kickoff had a very high incidence of injuries. In particular, I believe it was one of the places where per rate you could get a higher incident of concussion injuries. And that, of course, is a big no-no, particularly for the league, who is trying to A, get rid of that narrative for concussions, and B, eventually extend this game to this game that we love to an 18-game season so they can make more money. Now, the first thing that is interesting when you dig into the numbers for the XFL is that, one, there are a ton more plays. So like 90% of these balls they're going to want to return because the penalties to either kick it right into the end zone, you get the ball at like the 40-yard line. The kickoff team is going to want to put the ball in place. You're going to get a ton more plays. I think that's positive. And they've shown that because of where they were lining up with the XFL, the incident for, I think, probably concussions and soft tissue injuries is way down. Positive, right? Because there's not that buildup. Now, what the NFL has done, now the NFL can't go to the XFL and say, we took this. So what they need to do is, they need to go and they need to put a committee together of smart people and say, okay, let's have a starting point with the XFL. Let's tweak it to make our own so we can say it's ours, not theirs, and now we can implement it. So what did they do? They backed it up a couple yards. So the kickoff coverage and the kickoff return guys are starting further away from where the catch point is. And the second thing they did that's going to be the most interesting is they took, instead of being 10 on 10, they took two people off of the kickoff return line. And they allowed them to be kind of what we call lagging players. So you can end up with a couple double teams. And that is going to completely change the way this is looked at just from a horizontal spacing standpoint. So now you're going to be able to get at least two double teams if you want them. And listen, there's going to be a whole lot of fluctuations in how different coordinators deal with this. There might be fluctuations in the kind of return guy you have. There might be fluctuations in the type of body you put in front of the kickoff coverage guys as far as, do you want a bigger guy now because there's less space for that coverage guy to operate in because they're only 5 yards apart. With these double teams, you're going to be able to kick out. You're going to be able to do kind of gap schemes. You're going to be able to do double teams that have maybe a lead-in blocker through. Kind of like the George Kittle or Juszczyk play where they run the outside zone and those guys lead up inside kind of the, like the tackle block. You can have like, you can kind of picture that with the same presence here as far as an inside out kick out block leading up through for the play. So there's going to be a lot of variations. Really good special teams coordinators, really creative guys are going to have a huge advantage here. But what is interesting is going back to the concussion deal, or going back to the injury thing, they can point to the XFL and say that this is a low injury risk incident as compared to what we've been doing prior as far as the amount of actual kickoffs versus the amount of actual injuries. But what they can't do is say how this wrinkle is going to affect the injury rate. And what I always find interesting with this stuff is once you start building momentum, once you decide this is going to get passed through and you kind of forget about the initial reason that you were doing it and you start focusing on, oh, well, we're going to get, you know, 1,100 more plays or 1,000 more plays during the season, which again is a great thing. You just have to think about, because you have the XFL, because you have the CFL, because you have the European Football League, or League of Football, excuse me, you have national leagues over in Europe as well. You've got all these incubators. The XFL is not there anymore. It's United Football League, whatever it is now. Who cares? But the point is, you could tell any one of those groups to implement this on behalf of the NFL, and they would do it. And you could get some data and information back. You could wait another year, and you could get a little bit more clarity on how this is going to affect that injury rate, if you want, if that was really your priority. Yeah, because the other thing you would have to understand is the kickers in the NFL are so much better than everybody else, that the placement of the ball, how they're going to kick the ball, how much spin, what height, are they going to loft it? Are they going to shoot it straight? Are they going to try to hit a skimmer that you know hits on the 20 and bounces into the end zone because they're not penalized? All of these things are, that's why there's going to be two returners back instead of one, another rule change. So all of these things are happening largely without any. It's just like you drew it up on a card and you talked about it and said, oh, I think this is going to work. I don't know what's going on my camera today, guys. Apologize. I think this is going to work. But the reality is there's a lot of kind of gray area and question marks that I think they could have gone into the UFL or whatever it's called now and said, hey, do this for a year, grab some information, have a better sense of it. But one way or another, I think progress is a good thing. It's particularly good for the Green Bay Packers because they got the best return guy in the game. My estimation is you're going to get a starting point a lot higher. I think this is already 4 or 5 yards higher than the league average, but I think you're going to get a lot more big plays. And I also think you're going to get a lot more, I think you're going to get even a higher starting point than I think it's the 29 or 30 yard line that this has proven to be in the XFL. So I think you're going to get a lot more action. I think you're going to get some big plays in the game. And quite frankly, really good special teams or creative special teams guys, the guys that figure out the right personnel to put on the field. Like, this is a whole new variation of, you have your offense, you have your defense. This is a very, very unique play where I think the genius of a special teams coach or coordinator can really shine through. So I'm excited to see it from that standpoint. I'm excited about the whole thing. You just, you know, like to kind of talk about the impetus for where it starts and kind of where we're at and how much that's changed. Now, let's talk about the hip drop, because I know this very, very well. And let's talk about the hip drop a little bit, not historically, but in the way that our society now deals with everything, our social media society, our soundbite society. So here's how life works now, right, with this stuff. You have an injury. Somebody has an injury. And go back to the horse collar. I think it was... It was the safety for the Dallas Cowboys. I forgot his name now, but the guy was a thumper, and he started pulling on the back of jerseys, lining on the back of guys' legs, started breaking legs, and eventually they had to ban it to go through this process. So here's what happens now. And listen, they've done a lot of things in the name of player safety that aren't good for the players, right? You take away concussions, you blow out lower body limbs, right? You end careers early. So you have a group of people, though, that generally speaking, now for whatever reason, whatever their ulterior motives are, they're trying to make the game safe. And we could talk about, is it because they want to extend the season? Is it because they generally care about the player safety? Because they want better PR? Yes, 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 all of it. But they're trying to make the game a more quality product where good, high-level elite players that make differences in games don't get hurt for unnecessary things. We can't necessarily do a lot about soft tissue injuries, non-contact injuries. There's a lot of things you can do, but as a league, you can't legislate a lot of that stuff. But what you can do is you can legislate some of the contact stuff, and the guys at the league, Troy Vincent and the company, are doing the best they can, what they think is right, to legislate some of this contact injury stuff to prevent it, so that high-level players, a la Tony Pollard a couple of years ago, don't miss time for something that could have been avoided. And then you have a second set of guys, and these could be old school guys like me, old school fans, that just don't want to see the game change. We like the violence. A lot of people watch the National Football League because they like the big hits. They like the guys going across the middle, get their head knocked off. They like all this stuff. They want it. They want to see it. That's why they want to see like the gladiator sport. And that time has gone and passed. Most of us are well aware of that. But we do miss some of it. So there's that group. I don't know if I'm in that group or not, but there is that group. And then you got this group who just got to get clicks on X, got to get clicks on Twitter. And so they put things up and they ask questions so they get responses, or they're on TV shows they want to be on a TV show, and they throw stuff up and they make ridiculous statements and start, you know, blasphemizing the people who are making decisions because this isn't blah, 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 blah. And unfortunately, as we all know, the more, you know, squeaky wheel gets the grease, the more noise you make, the more clicks you get. And now it becomes a topic that is, quite frankly, this is not a difficult thing. What's difficult about all of these new rules, these contact rules, hip drop, whatnot. And my quickly, as a background, I played various levels of rugby post NFL for years, know it extremely well. I coached tackling in the National Football League and at lower levels. I've created tackling systems for the National Football League, different various teams and lower levels. And I put together presentations on this very subject for the people, for some of the people that are in the room making decisions on this very subject. So I kind of know what's going on. The most difficult part about making a rule is the language that they have to use to implement the rule. Is it clear? Can they give enough obvious examples? Is there any loopholes, or is there any gray area that they can erase to make this as crystal clear as possible? Or are there going to be too many questions? And I think right now, as you see the hip drop and you see kind of the angst from not only the NFLPA and some of those guys, and some of the guys are just looking for clicks, but the general problem with some of these rules, and I think maybe unfortunately right now in the early stages, this rule is that it's just not really clear from the way they've stated the rule what you're supposed to come up with from a defensive standpoint. So let's go through some of this stuff real quick and see if I can help. So first of all, I just have J.J. Watt here a couple of weeks ago on a Pat McAfee show talking about, you know, three-time defensive player of the year, Hall of Fame guy.
Pull up videos and show you what a hip drop tackle was, or if you asked me to demonstrate a hip drop tackle, I wouldn't be able to do it. I don't understand. Like, I'm flustered. Like, I'm just angry about
it. A wordsmith, you know, obviously, but it doesn't matter if you were a player or not a player. I mean, listen, J.J. Watt has probably, I don't know, for me, he's number one or number two, greatest all-time defensive, you know, front four players I've ever seen. Him and Aaron Donald. Obviously, I was with Reggie. Top three at the very, very worst, okay? But his point, I think, is not that he couldn't learn this. It's that as it stands right now, and again, I'm projecting a little bit, but as it stands right now, nobody has given him a clear, and this was back in December, a clear idea of what this is. Okay. So this is the Mark Andrews play, and this isn't the beginning of it, but this is what happened. Okay. So Mark Andrews gets rolled up, and you see that the linebacker right here has grabbed the hips, swung his feet out from behind, and it's landing on the back of his feet. Okay. So right now, if I was to make through one snapshot, you'd say, and we're going to make a rule because I don't want this to happen, because you can see that the weight landing on the back of the legs is the problem. I would say when a defensive player does not try to run through the tackle and instead grabs the hips, swings through the back of the legs and lands on the back of the legs, that should be a foul, right? And we go through the legalese, but that would be the gist of it. Now, here's where it actually started. Tony Pollard, a couple years ago, takes the arrow or the Texas route and gets rolled up on, and his ankle goes the wrong direction. And I think I got it again here. Yeah, so the way that this works is, and the problem with this is, if the defensive player is coming from behind, let's start it even earlier than that. The reason that we have an issue is because we taught rugby tackling, and rugby tackling doesn't apply as well to football as it does to rugby. Why? Because football players wear helmets. So in rugby tackling, we brought in all these, you know, I call them funny, the guys who live in other countries that are really good at rugby, and they came in and they said, hey, this is how we tackle. It's safer. Although, you know, per play, it's not necessarily safer, but they're not wearing helmets. So we kind of went through it. They put their heads behind the hip when they're tackling. They do that because they don't want to take a knee to the side of the head or a thigh to the side of the head and get a concussion. We wear helmets. We don't have that same set of problems, but we taught it that way. And so what ended up happening is over the course of time, smaller players realized against these bigger, stronger running backs with huge legs that if they wrap up at the hip with their shoulder behind or their head behind, like you see here, and they just swing their legs through, it changes the center of gravity of the running back or the ball carrier, and it creates hundreds and or thousands of pounds of pressure, depending on the velocity of the tackler, hundreds or thousands of extra pounds of pressure behind the center of gravity of that ball carrier. And then when you add all that to, you land on the back of their legs, something bad is going to happen. So that's what happens here. And you see he hits this, and then it's all bad things. But you'll notice there's a split second where the defensive back here is completely weightless. All of his weight is off the ground and on the backside of Tony Pollard. And that's what ends up ruining him. Could have blown out his front knee. Now, just real simply, let's not get into a physics class, although John Arnor would love this. The idea of centrifugal force. As you spin around, if you think about the boy in the center holding the string being kind of the hips of the ball carrier, as you swing around that ball carrier from behind, force is the mass multiplied by that velocity divided by the radius. So essentially, your mass is being multiplied by a square of the velocity of how fast that person's going. So as they swing through, just think about the extra weight, a 200-pound guy who's swinging through at, you know, 10 miles an hour, you know, on a small radius, which is essentially the distance from the chest to, let's say, their hips. You're looking at, you know, 2 feet. You're looking at just a force multiplier of five times. And that can do tremendous. I mean, that just puts a tremendous load on the lower body and the lower limbs of a ball carrier. And then you add to that, they actually end up landing on the backside of that ball carrier's legs. So you see, kind of mathematically, at least, I hope you get the idea of, maybe my math's off, but you get the idea of how powerful this can be when you consider the tackle. And if you go and look at this play one more time, that's why this kind of stuff happens. Now, I think the easiest way for me to explain it is to watch these guys. I mean, it does work. Now, you'll see that they're going in front of a four-legged animal and they're dropping down, grabbing the neck, and going in front. But the concept's the same. The only reason that cowboy can take down that steer is because when he swings through, there is so much force, gravitational, rotational force, going into the body that it has a real effect on that four-legged strong animal's ability to operate. You see, again, the entire body's off the ground. They swing through, and now you just have so much pressure going down, even with a strong four-legged animal, with all the weight in front of the body, by the way, not behind it. You have the ability to alter the center of gravity. You have the ability to alter the directional the force that they're putting into the ground, and you can redirect, you know, something in other cases. I'm not going to that thing and just trying to wrestle that thing down man-to-man, man-to-cow. Last thing here, just a quick one for a shout-out for the Appleton people. I didn't know there was an Appleton, Minnesota as well. This fellow was from Appleton, Minnesota. You see it again, though. All they're doing is they're taking all that force, they're putting it down on the neck, they're redirecting that center of gravity, and they're able to take down these steers. It's the same concept that we're using here with this tackling. Now, to get back to rugby, this is where things go wrong. We'll see a couple different looks here from the rugby world. And you see the feet come off in front, swing through, and now put all the force. Now, this is on the side of this guy's leg. But this is where initially you saw a lot of pushback from the leagues and trying to make their game safer. They created this hip drop tackle rule that has allowed the NFL to start looking into this hip drop tackle rule. Most people don't know that. This started 3 years ago, maybe, in Australia and New Zealand. And so this is a very obvious one. You're getting dragged down. You get all your feet off the air, or off the ground, excuse me. You put the full force into this guy, and all of a sudden, you're swinging back, full force behind him, and now you're going to land on the back of his feet. And that's where things go bad, right? If you just ran, dragged your feet like we used to, you run through the guy, run through, you know, we talk like the Pete Carroll Seattle Seahawks hawk roll where you turn a shoulder and row through it, or you just stop your feet from moving, you drag him down and you're not swinging through. All of those things are A, legal, and B, a lot safer. This is just problematic. And again, this is why they've changed the sport over there to make this illegal. It seems pretty, in other words, when I see this, it seems pretty obvious. Don't do that. I showed you the Mark Andrews play. Don't do that. I showed you the Tony Pollard play. Don't do that. And you see a play just like this. Don't swing your hips around. Don't have your feet off the air. It almost looks like you're swinging from the swing set, or like you're in a cradle position and you're going to land with your butt, your hamstrings or something on the back of their legs. Don't do that. The problem really gets down to when you look at the language of this sport, of this rule, it becomes an issue that he gets sent off here. He's upset. I think I'll give you one more look. But the swing through is really where the issue lies. And you can just kind of tell, like, when you see it like that, for me, I don't know. I know we take away some things from defensive players and we don't like it, and I get that. But for me, this seems like we have the highest level athletes in the world, and we're going to tell them they're not allowed to do that. We're saying you got to find a different way. And no coach in the world until now would be coaching that technique. Like, that's never been coached. Because we already try to run through, we got to get our hips going. We try to explode through, use our hips, have our feet chase our hips, right? We're trying to be aggressive. We learned how to hawk roll. Like, we've done other things to fix this problem that don't involve swinging your legs through, having all centrifugal force go into the backside of the center of gravity of this ball carrier, and then land on the back of his legs, potentially trying to break them. So that has never really been a tackling or a performance thing. Here's the issue. Article 18, hip drop tackle. It is a foul if the player uses the following technique to bring a runner to the ground. A, grabs the runner with both hands or wraps the runner with both arms. And B, unweights himself by swiveling and dropping his hips and or lower body, landing on or trapping the runner's legs at or below the knee. Now, penalty for a hip drop tackle, loss of 15 yards, automatic first down. Here's the problem. That's too vague. I showed you three examples where the person was behind the ball carrier. So the center of gravity shifts to the back. His legs sweep. So you go studs up, legs sweep out in almost like a cradle, like a cradle position, and you land on the back of their legs. Okay. You start at the hip, the torso, and there's these all these, how do you want, there's other language to use to grab. I know that some of my friends will be mad at me for not bringing that up. But the simplicity of this is, has to be on the back of the legs, has to change the center of gravity from where it is to behind them, right? And the entire body has to come off the ground. Those are the three things. And the entire body has to come off the ground, not in a diving where if I'm diving at somebody, my belly button's still facing the ground, but I swing through and my hips are pointed up and the backside of my body's coming down on the back of the legs. That's the rule. You take that rule, you implement it because it's crystal clear. There's better legal language, I'm sure, to say that. It's crystal clear. It's easy to point out. I could give that to J.J. Watt in the first, and he would go, I get it every time. All these other things are not hip drop tackles. If it's close, we're not going to call it, okay? And we're going to go through a season of that and see how it works. That's not what they did. And maybe they'll fix it as we move, but right now, that's where I think a lot of the anger comes from, is it's not clear which are hip drops and not. That seems pretty obvious to me. Like, that just doesn't seem like it's very hard. Now that I just read, or I just explained the language, I think what I explained is obvious. Maybe it's not, but to me it's obvious. The language is not obvious because they could come from the side. There's a bunch of things that could happen that don't involve that specific criteria. So let's look at this play. You can see it right here. Feet up, sits down on the back of the legs. This is a foul. We don't want that. Instead of running through this tackle, instead of hawk rolling this tackle, techniques that this person's been taught, swings his legs through, sits down on the back of the legs. This is the exact same effect as a horse collar tackle. Call it a foul, move on. That's it. Minka comes in with a good form tackle, by the way. This one, I had to put this one here. This hurt me. This, like, as a red-blooded American male, this just hurt my soul when I saw this. I'm surprised this guy limped off, but it just looked so, so painful. So, so painful. That's just tough. I don't know, you know, we could talk into, is this a foul, hip drop, this and that and the other thing. I'm just telling you right now, that looks rough. Oh, man, look at this. Whole different scenario, though. He's actually too tall. Gets up tall. We'd have to call a horse collar because he's on the back of the jersey here. But the effect is kind of the same. Man, that guy's hurting. Now watch some old Bobby Wagner tape. He's just going to. Now, he could hip drop here, but he sinks properly and runs through this guy. Just, okay. Just runs right through him. In other words, he could swing his legs out. He could do a bunch of stuff. Puts his head in front. Absorbs the guy. Runs right through him. Now, I know Bobby's a big, strong guy. And the running back's not as big as he is. And I know, you know, you're seeing a lot of these from DBs who are, you know, at a size disadvantage. Let's watch Patrick Queen here a couple years ago. Now, he just turns this into a shoulder roll. I'll show this from the end zone. When people say, what are the guys supposed to, you know, when you show the Mark Andrews tape and you go, well, what are we supposed to do? It's okay. Why don't you just do this? Because this is what you've been taught anyways. You run through, right? And you shoulder roll down. You use your weight. You drop your shoulder. You hawk roll through, whatever you want to call it. And you roll the guy to the ground. You don't roll up the back of his legs. Simple. Great form tackle. That's a great open field chase, exact same scenario tackle. That's it. I think this is Keanu Neal from a couple years ago. What are you supposed to do? I'll just run through him. That's a great tackle. Like this, there are so many examples of things you can do. And we see a handful of plays that you haven't been taught. And have turned out to be really, really effective plays, as we saw with the steers. But you just don't do them. Now we got a guy coming across the middle. Okay, and I showed you that angle for a very specific purpose. Watch it again. He catches at the, 37-yard line here, and he dives. You see the feet are not swinging through. He just goes limp. That's not a hip drop tackle. Show it from the end zone. I don't know language-wise if they're going to call it, but he's diving. He doesn't swing his feet through. He keeps his belly button towards the ground. He's going for the momentum, trying to go forward. He's trying to put the guy in the ground going forward. Not a hip drop tackle. Clear. Clear. By how we've talked about this, clear. Here. Could sit on the back. What does he do instead? He rolls through. Makes the tackle. Again, had the opportunity to swing his feet through, break the guy's legs. Didn't do it. Clear. And then, of course, I put that in. I had that already. I'm going to show that one more time so you guys see it. Oh, sorry. This is a 15-yard pass. I was roughing the passer. So, I guess my point is there's something you could have fixed and you didn't. You had the opportunity to, but you wanted to focus on this hip drop instead. I think the issue for me really is, because I'll be honest with you, I think the rule is necessary. And here's what I would say. And I told the people that are much more involved in this than I am the same thing. If you were not going to ban that rule, I would go to every NFL coach, defensive coach, and coordinator and say, you need to exclusively start teaching the hip drop tackle because it is incredibly effective when you're chasing a guy from, let's say, side view to a little bit behind. It is incredibly effective because of all the centrifugal force, all the reasons we talked about. If you will hurt people, no doubt, but if they're not going to enforce it and you want a change to be made, or you just want to be incredibly effective at what you do, then go ahead and start teaching it. So I'm glad that they got rid of it. I think that the way that they've described it makes it difficult. It's a little bit ambiguous. I think the stuff that we just talked about, my opinion, and again, the problem is I'm no legal expert, and I'm certainly not a wordsmith. But I do think that with clarity, this will go away in 2 years. In 2 years from now, we won't ever talk about it. It'll be like the horse collar. You see it every once in a while. People get a foul. That'll be it. But nobody does it anymore. But it has to be, I think, a little bit more clarity with the language. Now, that said, we've never done that before on this show. But it is, I don't know, it's somewhat interesting. Let's go to some listener questions because some of this stuff is okay. No, I haven't looked at any South Dakota State offensive linemen. I'll take a look. How have these types of rule changes affected the way players are coached? This is exactly what we're talking about. I don't think anybody was coached to do the hip drop. I think they should be coached to do it if it's not banned. So I'm glad it's banned. But no, I don't think anything's going to change. They're just going to say, hey, listen, if you do this, there's going to be some severe penalties for our team. Right, so we can't do this anymore. Here's the alternative. Let's coach the alternative. What a lot of fans don't understand is the amount of time that most teams actually spend on individual work or like tackling work is so minimal that you wouldn't even believe it. Like you want to be the best at the basics. We always talk about be the best at the basics. Be really good with your footwork and your basic techniques, blocking, tackling, etc. We don't spend a lot of time doing it. That's why a lot of guys aren't good at it. But elite level athletes that are competitive, like these guys are going to figure out a way to get somebody down. And they figured out what is the most efficient way to do it. I'm sure nobody was watching the cowboy steering that I put on there. But if you looked at it, you go, I wonder if that works with NFL guys. It's not a far throw, right? So it's certainly effective. They're going to coach it not out of the game, but they're going to be more detailed when they coach. They spend more time on it. And they say, listen, if you're thinking about doing this, here's the alternatives. The problem is, like with the Cowboys video that I just showed or the Patrick Queen video, you got to make sure that the rules are so clear that those things are they're just universally understood. Those are not fouls. Some of the rugby stuff I showed, the first two I showed, those are fouls. But that stuff is that's not a foul. Teach it. Or better yet, teach perfect technique every time and just say, you no, under no circumstances, you cannot do this. And with the first one, with the kickoff, I can't wait to see what these special team coordinators come up with. I think they're going to come up with some really cool stuff. I think the special teams coordinators are going to come up with some really cool stuff for this kickoff, honestly. Hip drop tackle shouldn't have been coached out the league, but so here we are. Okay. Does being able to play multiple O-line positions in college equal being able to play multiple O-line positions in the National Football League? It's player specific. Some guys can play every position in college, don't have a place in the National Football League. But I would say this, if you're a high-level guy, you're going to be able to play multiple positions in the league. You don't really find, it doesn't mean you're good at everything, but if you can play guard and tackle, that's better than being able to play guard or tackle. So like, for example, Jonathan Ogden comes in the league, plays left guard, can play left tackle. Laramie Tunsil comes in the league, starts at left guard. Next season, bumps out to left tackle. Brandon Albert starts at left guard, bounces up to left tackle. Mike Flanagan could play center, could play left tackle. Frank Winters could play center, could play right guard. Guards can switch back and forth. Yeah, so it helps. But I always, listen, if you're going to the National Football League, you want to be kind of elite at something. You can be a jack of all trades and have a career, but if you're trying to bang out a career and you're like, hey, I could play every position, you're valuable, right? You're valuable at a price. If you are elite or you're really, really good or you're more an above average starter at one of those things and you're just maybe not as a jack of all trades as some other guy, they're going to want the above average to elite level starter that plays that position much more so than the guy who can play four positions or the center. You know, I think what you're talking about is when you talking about backup guys that can play multiple positions are super helpful. Listen, Elgin Jenkins can play those other positions, but he's not nearly as good as he is at left guard. So the versatility is helpful, but let's not sit here and say that his value to the Packers is that he can play every position. The value to the Packers is that he's a damn good left guard. If they move him to right tackle because he can do it, he's not as valuable anymore because he's not as good at right tackle as he is at left guard, if that makes sense. Yeah, is tackling worse? Is it overall due to a very little live tackling practice? Yeah, and it's not only live practice. It's just like attention to detail and technical work and practice at all. Absolutely, absolutely. And here's the last question of the day. Best O-line in Packers history. All-time starting O-line, any team, any era. So here's what I always say about this. When people ask me historical questions, I think you have to separate between like old, when they ran student body right, student body left, and in the last, let's say, 30, 40 years. So when you talk about the Packers Super Bowl offensive line, the offensive line, maybe my generation that came after that was pretty good. You talk about with Balaga Bakhtiari, with Lindsay, with TJ and Sitton, I think that was a really, really good line as well. So, I mean, you got to remember when the Packers went to the Super Bowl, that line probably wasn't as good as maybe those the two after it, but the interior guys, you had a healthy Aaron Taylor, was an absolute unit. Outland Award winner in college, Notre Dame guy. You had Frankie, who was all-time Packer great. And then you had Timmerman. And Timmerman was an incredibly good player who probably just got more notoriety later in his career when he went to the Rams because the Rams greatest show on turf. But those three, from an interior standpoint, I like, myself, Mike, and Marco. Of course, I like Josh and Lindsley and TJ Lang, but it's tough to say that those three guys and their prime are not on par with those. So I think the differentiator becomes which tackle tandem do you like better? Do you like Chad and Mark? Do you like Balaga and Bach? And here's the hard part for me. Box, he's the best tackle that they're, you know, they've had. So I guess I just answered that question, but I don't really want to answer that question. Anyways, guys, thanks for watching the show. We'll get back into some more Packers stuff, maybe some pre-draft stuff next week. This is something that I know that I've had to talk about outside of this show. There's a lot of stuff out there. So, you know, this show, we don't really do anything but try to help guys enjoy the sport by learning more about the sport. So I hope that helps. You can find me, Michael68, at X Process to Perform on Instagram. You can obviously check out the show on our YouTube channel, Process to Perform. Block Party, subscribe, rate, review us, do all that stuff. Thank you guys for watching Bet Online. Keep watching the tournament. There we go. We'll talk to you later.